Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 73 of The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer, and in my co-host chair today is not Jen Tulloch, our dear friend of the show. It is Julia Tertian. Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You were on a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You are a food writer. You're a cookbook author. Your most recent published book is It's All Good. You co-wrote that with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Correct. Yep.
What have you been doing since then?
I've been doing kind of the opposite, which was co-authoring a book with Jody Williams, who runs Bouvette. So I went from extremely healthy food to extremely decadent food, which was a wonderful transition that I was very pleased about.
You were like, you're over the vegan A's. Let's get some aioli. Let's get some chicken.
It's sort of some
liver.
Balance. They're next to each other in the fridge. So the vegan A's next to the creme fraiche.
And what did you do yesterday? Something that I don't think anybody in this room has.
Oh, no. Yesterday was the greatest thing, which was one of my best friends from college got married to a wonderful man. And I officiated their wedding, so I am an ordained minister.
Non-denominational.
Yeah, I'm a non-denominational rabbi. And it was at a Chinese restaurant at the Golden Unicorn, and it was wonderful. And it went by way too quickly, which was the only bummer.
What was the food spread?
There were dumplings and champagne while everyone, you know, got there and arrived, which was really great. And then we had salt and pepper shrimp and little sort of buns with Peking duck and chicken and greens and noodles, and it was great. And then this big, huge strawberry shortcake, and it was really like a perfect wedding.
So last time you were here, also in studio, was Aaron McCarthy from Counterculture Coffee.
Just found out some good news.
Yeah, and he had just won the Brewers Cup for the U.S., and we just found out today that he won the Brewers Cup for the whole world.
Which is awesome.
So he's the best brewer in
Major Mazel
in the
tov.
Whole world. Yep. He's in Melbourne right now. That's how I say Melbourne. how's it going?
I think that works. I think I'm into it.
And hopefully we'll get him back on the show and talk about his newfound stardom.
And to work on our documentary. Don't forget.
We all, Jen and Julia and I, had this total dream to follow Aaron around to all of these coffee events because he's a total personality. And
they sound fascinating.
I think it's just one of those things that we want to do. Not sure if we'll ever get our shit together to do it. But, as my co-host, I just want to ask you a couple of qualification questions.
Qualification,
just
okay.
Qualifying, I guess that's
great.
More of the word. But just to really make sure that that we're compatible. So, question number one. Do you find it offensive to dress a cat in a houndstooth bow tie?
No.
Good answer.
It's just my immediate answer.
Okay, what is a better band name?
Okay.
A Touch of Class? Or Leo and the Towels?
Leo and the Towels.
Yes.
I am a Leo, so I think I'm biased.
So am I.
Yeah. There we go.
That might have been
When's
my
your birthday?
Name. August 20th.
Oh, you're a late Leo. I'm an early
Whatever,
Leo.
Whatever, I'm still Leo.
Don't
take it away from me. And I think that qualifies as, I mean, no, already. Those are perfect.
Okay.
The other question, which is relatively still related to bands, but who's your favorite boy band?
Well, we were just talking about One Direction before the show, but I've never heard a song of theirs. But I will tell you, the first concert I ever went to in my life was New Kids on the Block. So, you know, that holds a special place. My Aunt Renee took me, and I'll never forget it, for many reasons, one of which was she forgot where she parked her car. And after the concert, we had to have a police officer drive us around the parking lot looking for her car. So that made me feel really special because there was, like, you know, bright lights. And so it was awesome.
Who was your favorite new kid?
Oh, God, I have no idea. Joey? Was that one of the names?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of the name I can remember. Okay, I'll go with Joey.
I think it was... I'm embarrassing myself, but I think it was Joey, oh, you know them. Donnie, Jonathan, and Jordan.
That's crazy.
I really like Jonathan. Anyway, aside from this, non sequitur questions, but I think that you are qualified to be here.
Yeah, and okay, great.
I'm
great,
so
great.
Happy that I have one of the
I
most
feel relieved.
Magnificent heads of hair in
Which,
in the business.
I have
in
to say,
studio with me
the
right
headphones
now.
With the radio, I feel like I could get into headbands. I feel much cooler on this very hot day, so I'm into it. Thank you. No.
Well, also in studio today, two awesome New York City restaurant industry vets, Donna Leonard, owner of Il Buco and Il Buco Alimentare Vineria. Welcome to the show, Donna.
Thank you very much.
You should have said that with an Australian accent.
No one ever gets it right. The pronunciation was perfect.
Donna Leonard. No, terrible. That was awful. And also in studio, executive chef of Il Buco, Joel Huff.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to talk to you guys about Il Buco, almost 20 years old now, right?
Yeah, and 19.
19, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, almost old enough to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like me. But we'll check in with that. We'll also talk about Alimentari and just, I mean, that many years in the business, I'm really excited to hear how things are going.
As long as we leave my age out of it, we're fine.
That is not a qualification. That's not on my pad of paper here. Don't worry about that. So also, you know, obviously the white elephant in the room is that Gentolic is not here.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a fight or anything. Don't worry about that. She is just being a good family member and is at a baby shower in New Jersey with her fiance, Lindsay. And in honor of that, you know, obviously Chardonnay has had to cater that event. I mean, we are so connected to Chardonnay. It's like there is not an event that we have where they are not bringing food to. So what's on the menu at Chardonnay is going to be a best of baby shower food.
Perfect.
But first, we're going to go to our segment about the perils and blunders of a member of the front of house. It's called Front of House.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
Now, we've taken a little turn on this because Julia is, I mean, you're a member of the back of house, really.
Yeah, I'll stand anywhere, but, you know.
but normally, you're on the chefy side of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Julia has an amazing father named Doug Tertian, and he feels it necessary to, I mean, I this has to be, a way for you guys to bond.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I used to cook all the time when I was growing up, and neither of my parents were ever in the kitchen, and then when I left home to go, to college, all of a sudden they were, you know, a little bit hungry. So my dad started cooking, and it's been this great thing because it's sort of something he's started on his own. But we talk about it all the time. So yeah, it's definitely a nice relationship.
My dad does that with wine. Like he'll call me, and be like, "I had this Chassala the other day. Have you ever had Chassala?" I'm like, "Yeah, Dad, awesome." Anyway, but he writes you emails about everything that he eats.
Which is, you know, I think everyone, you know, gets all sorts of emails all the time. And when I get a cooking email from my father in my inbox, it's like the best moment. And sometimes they're to ask questions and sometimes they're just to brag and just share something. And it just, they endear me so much because he's just so excited. So I pulled a few of my favorites.
I mean, front of house is about your favorite story.
Exactly. So I'll read a couple. But the subject lines are almost as good as the emails, because this one was from March 21st, 2011. So this one goes back a little bit. And the subject line was, "How is your chicken?" And I have no idea what chicken, I can't remember. But the email reads, so it has nothing to do with chicken, "So I fished out, ha ha, all the fish, and cooked the soup down, thinking I'd make it saucier, as we discussed, to put on pasta. When the pasta water started boiling, I thought, why not just dump the pasta in the boiling sauce and not wash another pan? At the end, I dumped all the fish back in for a minute. It was even better than the other night. I'm so into the leftover thing. I just need to learn what to make with leftover dressed salad. I'm always making too much. Space. Maybe I should just divide it and dress half." So he figures out his problems as he goes, which I think is great.
Smart man.
Speaking of leftovers, the other one I pulled is from November 5th, 2012. And his subject line, a little off-putting but great, is called The Perfect Mush. And he said, Friday night we had ground lamb. I added onions, garlic, and rosemary. I just cooked it up in a pan. Sunday night, I had pasta with garlic and olive oil and split cherry tomatoes and salty black olives. And for lunch today, do you know what I did? I mixed the two. And it was the perfect remake of that old standard of ground beef and macaroni.
I think they call that hamburger helper.
Exactly. The next one is from January of this past year, 2013, January 22nd. And the subject line is adding beans to chicken chili, a question. I'm having neighbors over for dinner on Saturday, and I'm making chicken chili. Should I add beans? What kind? Straight from the can? At the end of cooking? Should I buy flan from the Portuguese restaurant? That was it.
Flan and beans.
By the way, none of these have like a hello or a how are you. None. These are truly the emails verbatim. The next one is from February of 2013, a few months ago, and the subject line is, I forgot to mention my lunch today. And he writes, I made kasha earlier in the week with sautéed onions and mushrooms. Each day that goes by, it tastes better. Finally, for lunch, I had it the way you would probably have it, with two fried eggs. It was really great. By the way, I should mention, I ate it out of that black Calvin Klein serving bowl. I think they've discontinued it, but it was a great bowl to eat out of, not just serve in. And the last
vintage bowl.
Oh, yeah. The last one that I'll share, I just got this week. And the subject line is just best combo. And Doug writes, instead of honey mustard, fig jam mustard. Really delicious. I guess Father's Day is coming up, so we can, yeah, a nice applause for Doug.
That was fantastic.
That's a very sweet man.
I want to know what the level of urgency you put on those emails. Is it like, oh, Doug, food thing again? Do I need to respond, or you just go, sounds good?
I usually pick up the phone and call him, because I don't really know what to say after I receive it, but I do, like, reread them over and over. It's like one of those where I just, like, it's always just big smile. And I just love that he feels some urgency on his end to share them. I think it's just the greatest thing. So, yeah, he's a character.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, no, my pleasure.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Donna Leonard and Joel Huff of Il Buco.
You're listening to Snickers by Obesity on the heritageradionetwork.org. Keep it locked for more from the morning after.
Back here on The Morning After. Almost 20 years ago, Donna Leonard and her then Italian partner Alberto opened Il Buco in what is now called Nolita. It was originally an antique shop, and it progressively just became a restaurant, because I don't know if that made more sense or what, and we're going to find out, but I'm calling Il Buco the original pop-up.
Before it was cool.
Before it was cool. I mean, I think everything is cool in 1994, but still, like, to have a pop-up restaurant then wasn't something that I think people were talking about. And if anyone knows of another pop-up restaurant, please let me know. I'd love to know. But welcome to the show, Donna.
Thanks so much. Nice to be here.
So tell me about how your antique shop turned into Il Buco.
Well, you know, I think we were pioneers on Bond Street in 94. We found this space by sheer chance, and my partner and I were talking about exporting Americana to Spain and Italy in those days, looking for spaces. And as I was driving my Suzuki Samurai across Bond Street, I saw Spectra Photo Lab putting on these mahogany doors next door to this funky storefront with crazy chandeliers in the window. And I was attracted to walk over there after checking out the photo lab, and met the artists who had this, used the space as a studio, and started talking about spaces in the area. And they said, well, actually, we're trying to rent out our back room. We're in dispute with the landlord. We might leave. I brought Alberto in the next day, and it turned out he knew them, and we all became very chummy. And within a month, they called us and said, we're heading back to Philly. Our rent is going up from $1,750 to $2,000 a month, and we own a building in Philly, so we're out of here. They introduced us to the landlord, and Alberto basically said, if I can't make it on $2,000 for 2,000 square feet in New York City.
I was going to say, how many square feet?
Crazy.
I'm going back to Europe.
I'm picking my jaw up off the ground.
It ended up to be $2,100 for our 10-year lease, a little bump up in the middle, and we were very pleased. And we went up to, I think we had $70,000 in our pockets. And we scraped the paint off the floor, and we moved a wall. And we had a makeshift kitchen in the back. That was the, it was a ceramic studio. Refrigerator and four burners, what we called the Susie Homemaker stove. And we opened the store. We went up to the middle of the, just below the Finger Lakes. And we hooked up with these people we've been buying antiques from, who were holding a few of our larger pieces, and we filled two 17-foot trucks with antiques and brought them down to New York and started this store.
What was the store called?
Il Buco.
Okay.
Il Buco. There was a wooden sign on the outside left from the artist with a big hole cut out in the middle of it. It was all gold leaf painted and funky and with a beautiful little patina. And Alberto looked at it and said, Il Buco, La Banda del Buco, which is a Vittorio Gassman Mastroianni film from the 50s that was one of his favorites. So we called it Il Buco. We opened the store and started cooking our lunches in the afternoon, and people would come in and have a glass of wine with us. And we had, I think Alberto from the outset, you know, thought he would eventually have this little wine bar.
Okay.
So
were you guys selling them?
No. We were just eating. Yeah. We were just having a little snack.
Okay.
And we thought, you know, to really make this work, we're the only place on Bond Street. You know, we should just get a wine and beer license and serve wine and little snacks to attract people down to Bond Street. And that'll be the way to really make this operation work. So we applied for the wine and beer license. It arrived dated his 40th birthday.
Oh,
so it was total serendipity in that space. Like when we walked into that space, you know, we just knew it had a magic. It had some special energy. And it really guided us. I mean, the space was really its own entity. So we got we had the license coming. We invited our landlords for lunch. They showed up. They saw what we had done to the space, and they flipped out. They were so thrilled that they extended our lease to include wine and food establishment. And for the same rent. And wow. We began this, you know, little tapas bar with Alberto in the kitchen and me in the front of the house. And he had never been a professional chef. And the minute we had more than 20 people, he fired himself and we started a very long and steady procession of chefs in and out of the kitchen, which was quite colorful and interesting and always new and exciting. And so Il Buco was born, the restaurant. And we, of course, within the first few years, stopped selling the antiques because it was just impossible to keep up. And I think our whole style was, you know, we couldn't have anybody else do the shopping. It was like we bought each piece with our own, you know, ideas and passion. And it just couldn't be done by anyone else. So we said, okay, no more antiques. And slowly, he said, it will never be a restaurant. We're just going to be a little tapas bar. And we told our wine distributors, you know, we're never going to be a restaurant. Of course, little by little, we became a restaurant. And he started spending more and more time in Italy. And you know, we many little projects came and went. And eventually, he did move back. And we divided our interests because it was a crazy situation. And I've been friends ever since. We really... great friends, and he still is the spirit that kind of roams in and out of Il Buco, whether he's here or not, causing all kinds of havoc and laughter. Not always an equal combination. And he's really always around for advice and thoughts and criticism.
What was Bond Street like in 1994? Because you're between Bowery and Lafayette.
Well, when you said pop-up shop, I was going to say more like crack-up shop. Because, I mean, the street was littered with crack vials every morning when we walked in the door. So Bond Street was desolate. It was really, you know, it was like a crack addict haven with, you know, a lot of artists, a lot of creative people living in reasonably priced lofts and what was a manufacturing district. So the first... newcomer on the block was Furniture Bob on the corner with the makeshift. That was really the first pop-up, you know. He had this shack on the corner of Lafayette and Bond where he would open up the doors in the morning and put the furniture outside and sell it.
That's
to you guys
so wild.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It was great. He's on 12th Street now, and then he opened across the street where the bath shop is now. So he was the real pioneer on the block, and we were the first real four-walled establishment.
It really, do you think that Il Buco could happen in Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, today?
For a much higher price tag.
So that to me means no.
Yeah, no, not like that, no. It was really, those were the days when everything was possible. And, you know, I think everybody finds their own carnation of that little, I mean, look where we are right now.
Sure.
Here
well, exactly, exactly.
It's a classic example, but obviously not in Manhattan. Downtown.
Yeah, no, Roberta's was able to build really like a compound out here in Bushwick, and
yeah,
that's why we have a radio studio, which is amazing. So, Joel Huff, how long have you been in New York City cooking?
I've been in New York for 15 years now.
What was your first city restaurant job?
Topeka. Dave Walzog, the Glazier Group. Southwestern food.
I was going to say, like, Kansas? Or
T-A-P-I-K-A.
Okay, yeah. Definitely not Kansas.
I don't know what's there now. It was, like, 56 and 8th in the theater district.
And then where did you... I know you were at Barbuto.
Yeah. Yeah. From Topeka, I went and helped open the first W Hotel on 49th and Lex for Drew Nieperant. Michelle Nichon was the chef. Stayed there for 3 years. A lot of fun.
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting project because it was all... The name was the curse, of, I mean, in my opinion. It was called Heartbeat. I think it might still be open, but I was like, wow, that's like... You can't advertise healthy food and think you're going to, you know...
Better for a band.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Well, there was recently...
It's funny because Michelle used to always brag about the fact that he had this band and they opened for... oh my God, I can't remember the name of the band, but it was like, I was like, wow, whoa, you opened for them. Wow.
What style of music was it? Was it like
a
ballads?
Rock band. I was like, how many chefs? And Waxman had a band. He was in a band too, he used to always talk about. It's like, there's something I think in innate in chefs that are like, we're you know, it's a,
life,
I think it's a lifestyle thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like kind of
total
like a
rock and rollers.
Like, yeah, it's like
yeah.
a rock and roll feel.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a reckless thing.
Yes.
So, from Barbuto, where did you go?
Barbuto, I met Mark Meyer and Vicky Freeman, and we opened Cook Shop. And I was the opening chef at Cook Shop, and I stayed there for 5 years. That was like my longest stint in a kitchen. It was great. I had a lot of fun.
And then, when did you make your progression to Il Buco?
It's like about a year later. I took some time off. I opened a little bistro in the East Village called Goat Town with a really good friend of mine.
I'm a very big fan of Goatown. That's my neighborhood.
So oh, yeah. No way.
I frequent it.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool little place. And then we parted ways, and I was just kind of hanging out and doing a little bit of private chefing. And Justin called me.
Mm-hmm. Who is chef at Il Buco Alimentare.
Yeah. He's like, why don't you come in and talk to Donna? I was like, really? I was like, okay. And so I came in, and we sat down, and we started having... You know, it was very casual at first. We were just having conversations and talking about food and talking about, you know, just kind of things in life and what I wanted to do and what she was looking for and what I was looking for. And then I started cooking in the kitchen and it felt right, you know. It just was one of those things where, and I had this really... I was trepidatious just because it's like my favorite restaurant. And I was like, well, how am I going to feel about working in like my go-to spot? Like mm-hmm. for like whenever my wife and I have like a special occasion, like we always went to Il Buco. And I was like, now where am I going to go eat?
That's a great
Alimentari.
Problem.
Alimentari. That's yeah. why I'm at Alimentari.
Yeah, of course. For exactly.
For anniversaries.
Yeah. It's my anniversary restaurant, actually.
So Donna, at that moment, what were you looking for in a chef?
I was looking for someone who shared my vision and someone who could really bring some consistency and follow the passion of where we'd been, you know, and know and someone I could count on. You know, we were opening Alimentari, and we had a lot going on, and I wanted somebody who could both work with Justin. And provide a little support for the new place and really man the ship of a, you know, almost 18-year mm-hmm. restaurant and, you know, give it some good feeling again. You know, we had Ignacio left, and that was the longest stint of a chef in the restaurant. It was 5 years. We had a great relationship, and, you know, it was at the end a really good parting, a really amicable parting, but you know, we were filling a spot at a moment when we had big pressure with an opening. So I wanted somebody who understood what I was looking for and was mature enough to really carry the place on his own and be able to be confident and self-assured enough to really keep Il Buco going and grow it while something else very overwhelming was mm-hmm. happening across the street, and to be able to support that thing at the same time. And I think the fact that he and Justin had such a great relationship just made it easy. You know, mm-hmm. I've never had such a an easeful, I know that's not really a real word, but I love
that
word.
We make up words here. It's totally fine.
You know, an easeful experience of nothing does better than that, of really working with two people who I really respected, who respected one another, and we all could count on one another and share ideas and really enjoy time together, even outside of the restaurants. So that's been really terrific. And continues to be. It's that relation. Those the relationship is always growing and morphing. And you know, we're talking now about, you know, furthering the connection and where we're taking it. And we all took a trip last summer with my husband and I and the two chefs. We took a biking trip to Italy for 10 days and went and explored the places that we love and kind of turned Joel and Justin onto some of our old haunts and went to some new ones together, and it was great fun and great sharing of ideas and inspiring for coming back and pushing through the next season.
That's so great. That's the next documentary.
Exactly.
Biking.
Well, let's take a break and let's come back and we'll talk about Alimentari and then what else is on the agenda for the Il Buco world. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
This song's called Heaven by Obesity on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Keep it locked for more from The Morning After. You
knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
Thanks, Bonnie Plants. I really love that commercial. It's my new favorite one. We're back here on The Morning After in studio, Donna Leonard and Joel Huff at Il Buco. Donna, Il Buco was how old when you opened Alimentari?
18.
That's a lot. That's a huge time frame to not open something new. And I feel like what is the trend right now with restaurateurs is open, you know, new places all over the place. What stopped you from doing that?
Life. priorities. Mm-hmm. You know, Il Buco was such an unexpected gift in my life. Really, totally unplanned, spontaneous, fantastic success. Really, a heartfelt venture that people responded to. So it was really satisfying and totally fulfilling. There were things as we grew, and again with Alberto's little, you know, wizardry in the background, you know, with bringing in the products from Italy, and let's make our own salumi, and let's make our own bread, and then having problems with the salumi program with the health department, and not really being able to bake because we didn't have the space, and not really being able to have a venue for a product line that we developed with the producers and friends in Italy. So there was always this idea that one day we'll, you know, do a little market, salumeria kind of little thing. And yet we won't do it unless we find the right space with the right situation that's not going to compromise what we have and lifestyle and whatnot. And it was tough to find that. And of course, you know, Alberto and I had separated, and he went on to have a lot of things going on himself. And I eventually had a son who's now 8. And so that was, you know, really time-consuming and fantastic venture in and of itself. So I really was not looking to do that. I made a little documentary on the olive harvest before Joaquin was born. And I thought
you're a documentary filmmaker at heart, or independent filmmaker at heart.
Yeah. And so I actually thought as Il Buco was up and running and, you know, on its own 2 feet, I could dedicate a little more time to mm-hmm. that. And of course, motherhood came in the middle of that, which was a welcome joy. And then eventually this space came together, and it was exactly what we always wanted, you know, nothing on top. Of course, you know, that didn't prove to be as easy as we thought, because there were still neighbors all around with all kinds of problems. But
because the crackheads are gone, they didn't really have any issue with noise before.
Exactly. We found a great building with an incredible landlord, you know, like really just salt of the earth guy. And I had just gotten married. So, you know, I had new love in my life, and I was building a family, and my partner, husband at the time, was just kind of pushing me and saying, you know, you got to do this. You know, I can see how passionate you are about it. You got to do it. And, you know, there were a lot of challenges because I was in a chef transition, and a lot of things were kind of moving and shaking around. But, you know, we really pushed ahead, and it was very exciting to see the vision that we'd had from the very beginning kind of come around full circle, to be able to include the whole process, the production arm.
And 3 stars from the New York mm-hmm. Times later.
Yeah, that was just unbelievable. I mean, you know, my dream at Il Buco from the get-go was, you know, 3-star restaurant with no tablecloths. You know, that's what I'd love to see happen here, without really caring. We had our last review from the New York Times at Il Buco in 1994 when we opened. That's a whole other story. I don't want to fill up the airtime, but you know, that had been my dream, you know, one day that Il Buco would hit that. And to get it from Alimentari was really just one and the same. And incredibly, totally unexpected, because nobody knew Pete Wells was in the house. And I was on my way to visit my really kind of partner, wine director, right hand, Roberto Paris, who'd been living in Thailand. I was taking a trip with my son to go see him before he moved back to New York. And I was literally getting on a plane the day after the review came out. And 3 days before, I was saying, this is so irresponsible to be getting on a plane and going to Thailand right now. And when Laura sent me that email, it hit my phone, you know, 3 stars, New York Times. You know, I just like, just welled up with tears. We just sat there reading the review to the team, sitting at a table in the middle of the Alimentari, and we just couldn't get over it. It was great.
So food-wise, Joel, at El Buco, now that Alimentari is there, how are you collaborating with things that are happening at Alimentari and El Buco? Are you, you know, kind of doing your own things? I always wonder if, like, business changes, especially when you are doors away from each other. You know, how's business been, and what sort of you know, food focus have you taken?
I mean, business is strong. You know, I mean, it's such an established restaurant. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, so much great work has been done over the years there, and you know, Donna has such an amazing commitment to product. You know, and it's just like, I spend a lot of time sourcing and hand-picking vegetables at the farmer's market. And, you know, you're on the phone a lot with people. And, you know, when Justin called me and we started talking about it and I started cooking, and it just, you know, I think, you know, we have a similar background. Justin's definitely done some different things. I've done some different things. But our approach is similar. You know, I think Il Buco has a little more of a rustic feeling in the store, you know. And so I try to like use that as an approach to the food. But I mean, it's incredible. The last month we've been doing December numbers in terms of revenue.
Fantastic.
You know, which is, you know, December's our biggest month. And in terms of food sales, I'm looking at my food sales and I'm looking at, you know, obviously what I'm spending, because
you have,
like,
to.
Yes, I do. I'm like, wow, I really want to buy all this good stuff that's popping up.
The farmer's market, I think that bill adds up for sure.
It's crazy. it's like shopping in Union Square. It's like shopping in a boutique, you know. It's like going to Midtown and going clothes shopping, Valentino. It's like, wow, look at these vegetables. Oh, my God, are they really this much money?
Well, and then you also have to, like, fight every other chef in the city.
I'm an early shopper. I get there 9:30, you know. I've been burned too many times going to my favorite farm stand. I'm like, where's this?
She's like, where's my fava's?
It's 11 o'clock. What are you doing? Oh,
and they do honor the relationship. I think they really, you know. When you're working so long with different people, they know what you want, and they're contactable.
Well, no, it's fantastic to be in such a big city and have such close relationships with farmers, and it feels like it should always be that way.
Sure.
But we are really, really lucky in the city to have that.
Yeah, I think it keeps you humble too, as a I mean, for me as a cook, you know. Like, I see these guys, I talk to them at the market, and we have conversations and about food and family, and, you know, it just, like, really grounds you as a chef and makes you understand, like, wow, this guy is, I think I'm working a lot. Like, these folks work so hard to bring this stuff down into the city, and it just really gives you perspective.
And I think a great source of joy for them to know that their hard work is going to be, you know, used somewhere where it'll be respected.
Sure.
And enjoyed.
Yeah, and they ask, you know, like, what are you doing with this? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you do with it? You know, like.
And they actually come in and eat it there. I mean, they really do.
Yeah, yeah.
They are customers.
You know, it's a full circle.
Yeah, experience. They do come in for dinner and give you their appreciation, and it's that shared, you know, the circle comes around again, and that really solidifies and conceals and really locks in that relationship. I think it's really a moment of, you know, we're kind of perched at a moment ourselves. I've been totally overwhelmed by the attention that I've had to give to Alimentari, and my vision as an owner at El Buco that I shared with Joel when we opened was, you know, let's get Alimentari open and now let's qualify El Buco and decide where we want to go to now separate these two ideas. As I was coming over, I was in traffic in the car and we hadn't had time to meet before, and well, we didn't get time to really chat about all this, but you know, the plan was to really work together at this point and say, what now? Mm-hmm. You know, what do we want to play with at El Buco? It's very hard when people ask me, what's the difference between the food at Alimentari and El Buco? And it's always, it stymies me every time because, yeah, they're different. They're very different, but they're very similar. And it's not, you have to kind of go and have the experience to really be very specific about it. It's different, a different, slightly different palate, a different hand, a different thought. Il Buco's always been a little more Mediterranean, and Alimentari has been really focused on Italian, mm-hmm. on Italy. For me, Il Buco was always Italian mama, Iberian peninsula aunt, you know.
You feel like you're in someone's, like, dining room, living room.
Yeah, I was going to say, right. I think it's, the setting has Il so
Buco's
much to do with
the
it.
Living room, yeah. And Alimentari is the production mm-hmm. studio, you know. And therefore, and it's the younger sibling, so it's a little hipper, a little brighter, a little younger. Il Buco is the place you can go and relax and have that really romantic, mm-hmm. intimate experience. Alimentari is not really about intimacy. It's about an intimacy around all your buddies,
sure.
you know. So it's a shared intimacy. So, and I think I'm really looking forward to having the time now to spend with Joel, looking into the flavors that we want to bring in. And, of course, El Buco will never be a fussy restaurant. Like, we don't want to qualify in a way that means, you know, more white tablecloth mm-hmm. style. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for instance, this summer we're talking about where are we going to go?
Yeah.
So I asked both my chefs separately, you know, where do you want to go? And, you know, Spain, Italy, Turkey, resounding Turkey.
Yes.
Yeah, like, oh, the cool. two of them, separate rooms, separate days. So, you know, we're looking into that to see if we can make that possible this summer. But it's always about that, you know, where are we going? Let's have some fun with it. It really does need to be joyful because there's so much work that's involved. And I'm super fortunate to have such two very extraordinarily talented and positive people around me in the kitchen. I think that's really the first step and one of the most important ingredients to
Absolutely.
Getting it right.
And there's something so nice about this commitment to constantly being inspired and even taking these trips together that's so nice, because especially when you're running one restaurant that's been open for so long and is so reliable, and you have so many regulars and people who have, I'm sure, been coming since, you know, you started. And I think there's this really fine line about keeping sort of an older place still really fresh. And I think both in the kitchen and in the setting, you just strike that balance so beautifully.
Thank you. That's the job. That's really the job.
It's like knowing how much to change. So yeah.
Well, you know, in building the Alimentari, it was how do we create the thread and the new space and give it the feeling that is both original and connected mm-hmm. to the original.
Yeah.
And how do we give it its own personality? And then you can't lose sight of, well, what's going on with the first one, because
sure.
it's very easy to get caught up with the new one. So that balance is something that's really important. And I think the fact that these two chefs know each other so well, and there's no ego involved about it. It's
Which
not a
rare.
Competitive atmosphere between them. So I think that's really the key to making all of it work.
Well, thank you both so much for being on the show. I can't wait to hear, you know, how Il Buco progresses, the Alimentari, and whatever else is on the agenda.
New project.
Can't wait to hear about it.
Not food related.
Oh. Maybe more antiques.
No more restaurants. No more restaurants.
Little home line.
Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with what's on the menu at Chardonnay's. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
This one's called IDID by Obesity on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Here on The Morning After. Our beloved Jen Tulloch is away at a baby shower right now, and Chardonnay's is catering. So everyone in studio today, Julia Tertian, Joel Huff, Donna Leonard, and I will be reading from that menu.
What's on the menu with Chardonnay's?
Is that Jen singing?
No, that's Sade. Yes, it's Jen.
Jen Day.
For me, it is Melissa's famous veggie pizzas. These are going to be Thomas's English muffins that we've defrosted. Mm-hmm. So they're still moist. You know, you want that soft dough
no
feel.
No crust.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm, none of that. No, like, nooks and crannies. Isn't that what they talk about with Thomas's? Little mayonnaise spread. Not veganaise. Sorry, Gwyneth.
No,
sorry,
no.
Julia.
A-okay.
Little broccoli. You know, it's probably frozen before it's been boiled, and it's very tender.
just the florets.
You know, you don't even need teeth to chew it. And on top, sprinkled from a bag of shredded mozzarella cheese, yeah, probably Kraft, something mm-hmm. like that.
Not sprinkle.
I'm gonna stick to my Kraft roots. I think
that sounds too authentic.
Polio.
too Italian.
And then that's sprinkled on top, and then we just look quick time in the
toaster oven.
The toaster oven, exactly.
Right.
Toaster oven. Melissa's famous veggie pizzas.
The toaster oven, which, by the way, is Doug Tertian's favorite appliance. I just want to throw that in there. He loves it.
I mean, it's far superior to a microwave, for sure. But you can't heat up coffee in your toaster oven.
That's true.
Anyway, Donna, mm-hmm. any ideas?
I mean, the first thing came to my mind is, equally as delicious as yours. I'm just Jell-O came into my mind. There's have to be some beautifully molded Jell-O for dessert, so I'm going to skip right to dessert. Of course, some hellacious color combinations, maybe shaped in rattles or boys and girls, different things, bows. I don't know. Maybe little baby-shaped Jell-O molds.
I mean, with, I find like baby marshmallows suspended inside the like something atrocious,
perfectly
delicious.
Mandarin oranges.
Yeah,
Mandarin orange segments.
from a can.
Yeah,
yeah. Nobody took those.
Dole canned fruit cocktail.
Exactly, Joel.
I'm having a hard time with this one, but yeah, I immediately thought of for some reason, I don't know why, but like baby food popsicles.
You were thinking way too chefy about this.
applesauce popsicle, carrot puree popsicle.
Why are we all so denigrating of baby showers?
It's just Chardonnay's.
Right.
It is Chardonnay's.
I got it. I'm not a big shower person.
Julia?
Well, I thought of I haven't thought about it that much, but I thought of two things. One is I just think you need small stuff, you know, the baby, like baby corn and, you know, those sort of like for a crudité kind of thing. Or like, you know, deviled eggs, but quail's eggs or something. Just small, small, small.
What a pain in the ass.
Kind of sorry you couldn't email Doug in the middle for an idea.
We could do a call.
Doug, what leftovers can we use for this baby shower?
You have one phone call you can make right now.
The lifeline. And then my other idea was just because I've had the terrific fortune of attending a baby shower too, which is I just think there has to be some pretty great cocktail because I think everyone who's there
I like that.
Needs a good drink. So,
is it called a mimosa?
Yes.
I was just thinking when I went to my sister's baby shower, it was we just drank a lot of orange juice and whatever horrible sparkling wine. Maybe Cook's.
A mimosa works. That's fine by me.
The one other thing that I've heard of, I've never witnessed, and it's something that 100% Chardonnays would give as a parting gift, like in your little goodie bag as you leave, is kind of like a little melted mini Snickers bar wrapped up in wax paper. So it's like a diaper. Oh, I gotta change it.
Oh, no.
And on that note, one of my favorite ways to exit in these awkward moments
achieved. Well done.
Yes,
Julia, thank you so much for helping out today. You've been such a great little partner.
Oh, anytime.
Donna, thank you. Joel, thank you. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org. We miss you, Jen.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.